We're learning Tehillim Kuf Zayin, Psalm 107, and Tehillim, the Psalms are actually divided into chapters by Jewish tradition. In almost all of Tanakh, the division into chapters is not a Jewish thing. It was a Christian monk who divided the chapters of Torah, Nevi'im, and much of Ksuvim. That's a good question. I don't have a good answer. But in Psalms, that's our tradition. In Eicha, that's our tradition. So, we begin. Now, this psalm is going to speak about Arba'a Tzerichim Leodot. The Talmud and the Codex, the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara, both tell us there are four people who have to give thanks. What we do in Shul, where we make a blessing, HaGomel L'Chayavim Tovot Shegemala Nikol Tov, he who does L'Chayavim to people who are found wanting Tovot, he does good things to them. We thank him, Asher Gemalani, that he did on my behalf Kol Tov, all good things. Who must make that blessing? Four types of people. Right? Person who traverses the desert, a person who was ill, a person who got out of prison, a person who goes through the sea. Right? A person who was relieved from captivity, yeah? Desert, or we will see now. We will see four people who have to give thanks. And today, when we fly in a plane, there are many opinions that say any plane ride you should say Gomel. Sfardim say Gomel for a trip from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv. Sfardim say it on smaller things than Ashkenazim. For Ashkenazim, it would have to be a bigger journey. Maybe through Jenin. Coming back to our chapter. So our chapter is about giving thanks. And whenever we give thanks, there's a basic philosophical question that we could ask, and perhaps we should ask. My kids asked me this on the Seder night. My kids asked, why do we thank Hashem for taking us out of Mitzrayim? He brought us there. Fair question, right? Yeah. So whenever a person is redeemed from a situation of difficulty or danger, so then one can also say Hashem caused the turbulence to start. Hashem caused the storm to begin. So why am I thanking Him when it stopped? Right? That's a real question. So we'll take the approach of the Radak, even though there are numerous answers to this question. We'll take the approach which revolves around a verse in Mishle. In Proverbs it says, Ivelet Adam tisalef darko. Man's own foolishness destroys his path. Ve'al Hashem yizaf libo. And then he gets upset at God. It's like the guy who is speeding down the highway, drunk driving, and then he loses control of his car. He says, Rabbon Shem, why are you doing this to me? I'm doing this to you? We view many, I wouldn't say all, but many instances where we run into trouble and danger and sorrow, we view them as things we've brought onto ourselves. You can't say all, at least not at this stage of our learning, because there are children who have illnesses, and what did they do? Right? There are circumstances, and that is the theme of the book of Job, and that's why this is not a panacea. We're not answering all questions here. I prefer to be intellectually honest, forgive me, but I don't see any other way. And that's why this is one aspect. It is an answer to some questions. It's not an answer to all questions. There will be other questions which have to be dealt with. Okay, that's a class in its own right. But the approach to this psalm explains the Radak. Radak is an acronym for Rabbi David Kimchi. He was an early commentary. He lived approximately 650 years ago. He preceded Rav Yosef Karo, he preceded the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch quotes from him. So Rav David Kimchi lived after Rashi, but before Shulchan Aruch, more like 700 years ago, a little bit more than 650. So Rav David Kimchi, in his commentary on this chapter, says the theme of the chapter is we have harrowing experiences, we have dangerous, trying times because we deserve it. And we thank Hashem for His kindness that even though we deserve the problems, He gives us solutions. And that is the answer Chazal told us about the suffering in Egypt, that we brought it upon ourselves. It didn't have to play itself out that way. We could have gone through that period of exile in Israel, not in Egypt. the baseless hatred between the brothers brought us down to Egypt, and then the behavior of the Jewish people in Egypt caused the Egyptians to hate them. They're losing their moral fiber was what brought upon them the suffering of the Egyptians. But that's the theme of this chapter. Again, that's not the answer to all questions. It's one answer to some of the questions. We begin the 107th chapter of Tehillim. Now, previous years have asked that I read the chapter with the traditional tune. Would you guys like to do that before I translate? Do you want the traditional tune or just to read?
Yes.
Okay, so we begin. Those who would like to learn the traditional tune, on my website, I have a class. I don't know if Mahon Meir organized it, but there's a series, a short series. You could learn how to say the tune. You go to 123torah.com. There's a... one of the folders is Learn to Lane, and I guess I think it should be there, either there or under Tehillim, under Psalms. I don't remember the heading. Okay, we begin. Hodu l'Adonai ki tov, ki le'olam chasdo. Give thanks to Hashem. Hodu l'Hashem. Give praise to Hashem. Ki tov. Because either we'll say he is good or he has done good upon us, even though we don't deserve it. Ki le'olam chasdo. For his kindness is eternal. Our kindness, well, it's questionable what we accomplish with our kindness. There was a girl in New York who was working as a servant or slave by a certain family. They had brought her out of South America. And they had taken her into their house, and they paid her nothing. They gave her food and clothing, and she was working as their servant. And then someone got wind of this, and they reported it to the authorities. So people came in the name of justice and doing kindness and good to the girl, and they took her out of their home and sent her back to South America. And the odds that that girl will get past age 30 and have a decent meal and be able to build a decent life are not very high. And I'm not so sure that they did kindness to that girl. I'm not saying it's so kind to hold on to a servant. I'm just saying, did they really do good to that girl? Because the country they brought her back into, it wasn't so clear that she wanted to go there. It wasn't so clear that their good intentions produced good results. When we look at what Hashem does in the world, we say, Le'olam chasdo. His kindness is eternal. Hashem knows how to factor the byproducts, the ramifications of what Hashem does. And so when Hashem does kindness, only He can do kindness that is eternal. Who gives thanks to Hashem? We continue, Pasuk Bet. Yomeru Geulei Adonai. Those who have been redeemed by Hashem, they should say, Hodu l'Hashem ki tov ki l'olam chasdo. Asher gehalam miyad tzar. Those people who Hashem redeemed them from a harrowing, a dangerous situation. Umeyaratzot kibitzam. Hashem gathered them from all kinds of countries. The people who have been gathered, mimizrach umimarav, mitzafon umiyam, from east, from west, from north and south, all those different people should give thanks to Hashem. So one interpretation is that David HaMelech is talking about the period of the gathering of Israel back into the land of Israel, Kibbutz Galiot. They should give thanks to Hashem. So the first of the three we're going to discuss are the people who have traveled through a desert. Because in ancient times, this was the most common. People did business, they had to travel. Traveling meant you went in deserted areas, you had to traverse the desert. And so when people get back from all their different traveling in different countries and they make it back safely, it's incumbent upon them to give thanks. So that's the first idea here. Ta'uva midbar, bishimon darech. People who travel through the desert, so ta'u, they can be lost. They can be traveling in the desert, and sometimes you're in an area of desolation and you're not sure if you're traveling in the right direction. They couldn't find a settled city. So people are traveling and they know they have a ration supply of water and food and they better find civilization fast. So as you're traveling through the desert, there are going to be times where you hope you're in the right direction. I don't know how many of you have ever gone hiking and in unmarked terrain. So there are times where you tell yourself, I hope I'm in the right direction, especially if you see the sun setting on you and you want to get out of there before the sun sets. So these people, Ir Moshav Lo Matzo, when they're traveling in the desert, they don't find civilization. Re'evim Gam Tzimeim. At times they're hungry, at times they're thirsty. Nafsham Bahim Titataf. And when a person is depressed, when a person is worried, part of the natural form their body takes is they're bent over in worry. A person coils into himself when a person is scared or worried. He goes into the fetal position. It's part of being scared. People curl up. They cuddle up. So when people are traveling the desert, they find themselves hungry, thirsty. So David HaMelech describes nafsham, their soul, behem titataf, folds over, goes into a fetal position out of worry. Vayitzaku el Adonai, batzal lahem. When things were dangerous for them, they call out to Hashem, mimitzukotehem, mimitzukotehem, yatzilem, and Hashem saved them from their dangerous circumstance. So, vayadrichem bederech yisharaha, Hashem guided them in a correct, straight path, lalechet el ir moshav, to go to a civilized city. Yodu ladonai chasdo venifleotav livnei adam. They, these people, so that's people number one, people who have traveled the desert, they will give thanks to Hashem for His kindness, and they will tell people how much kindness Hashem's done and what wonderful things Hashem's done for them. So again, the assumption is, we deserve the problem, and it's Hashem's kindness that gave us the solution. So the first example of that is the people traveling a desert. Pasuk Tet. This is a song. Yeah, you guys know the song? Ki hisbiya nefesh okeika. So that's okay. That's from this Pasuk. Ki hisbiya nefesh okeika. Because Hashem has given the soul that is filled with desire, when a person is lost and they're not sure they're going to find food, so then they're more hungry. We have a concept, the Mishnah says in Tractate Yuma, that when the person would walk the goat, he would walk 12 mil, he would walk a distance like 12 mile from the temple with the goat La'azazel on Yom Kippur. So when he would go on Yom Kippur with the goat, every mil there would be another tent. And in the tent, they would offer him a basket, and they would tell him, Harei lechem, harei maim. You have in this basket bread, you have in this basket water. If you feel faint as you're doing your job, you're allowed to break your fast and eat and drink. The Talmud says, never in Jewish history did anyone break their fast. No one ever broke their fast. They all walked the 12 mile, and the Sephorno writes, the Ish Iti was someone who medically was supposed to die that year. Who would walk the goat out? Someone who the doctor said would not live out his year. That was the tradition they had. And this person would never break his fast. So the Talmud asks, then why do they give him a basket at every tent? Why? Explains the Talmud, Pat Besalo. When a person's walking in the desert and they have bread in their basket, then they could hold on to the fast more easily. This is a concept that appears in many areas of Judaism. The idea of pat besalo, when you have bread in your basket, so then you're calmer. The Talmud says the same concept about a married person. That a married person is trusted that he won't do inappropriate things if he's going to be a kindergarten teacher, if he's going to be with his wife at home, even though right now they aren't permitted. Why? Because pat besalo, he has bread in his basket. He knows that in a day, in a week, his wife is going to go to mikvah, and then they're going to be permitted again. So that's the idea of pat besalo. Chazal said, a healthy state of mind is when a person has bread in their basket. When you have no bread in your basket, that's what the verse says, Leman anotcha l'nasotecha. Hashem says, I tortured you in the desert. Hashem tortured us. He gave us man from heaven. He gave us water from a miraculous rock. What's the torture in that? Says the Talmud, sleep at night and not have bread in your basket for tomorrow morning. Even though for 40 years, the bread always fell from the sky. Right. but you went to sleep at night knowing you had no bread to feed the kids tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, you had to assume and hope and pray that God would give you man the next morning. Well, you better behave yourself. It makes you wonder how the Jews rebelled against Hashem with the golden calf, with the spies. Why did they think they'd have man the next morning? I don't know. But coming back to here, so the Pasuk describes, ki hisbia nefesh shokeka, the soul that desires, the soul that's yearning, because when you finish your rations, so then the psychological impact of having no more food with you, that's more potent than not having food altogether. I shouldn't say more potent, but it's also potent. And that's the Pasuk is describing how Hashem satiated the hungry soul. V'nefesh re'va milei tov. In a hungry soul, Hashem satiated with good when the person made it back to civilization. Yosheve, the people who were settled, choshech v'tzal mavet, in darkness and the shadow of death, asireoni uvarzel, in bondage of affliction and in shackles of metal. So what are we talking about? We've gone over to discuss the people who are in captivity. When Gilad Shalit was in captivity, I would pray for him every day. Why? I would pray on a number of levels. Number one, I would pray he would get free. Number two, I would pray that Hashem give him the strength, the emotional stamina, to withstand the tormentation of being a captor, being in captivity. Chazal tell us that being in captivity is the worst, because all types of affliction are included in a state of captivity. People decide if they're going to give you food or not. People can torture a person. People can do everything to a person in captivity. And the psychological state of knowing that someone else could do anything to you at a whim, that's also a very destructive state to be in. So the Navi describes the people who are in darkness and the shadow of death, salmavet. When a person's in captivity and he knows that at any moment they could pull the trigger on him. Asirei oni uvarzel. They're in bondage of affliction and metal shackles. Ki himru imreel, and this Hashem did to them because of their transgressions, and that's what we said. This chapter is talking about those people where that's applicable. Vatzat elyon na'atzu, and they blasphemed against God's advice, that they rebelled against the way Hashem told them to live their lives. And this is, unfortunately, it's true of any time we transgress. It's one of the difficult things in life. That anything we do that Hashem told us not to do. Wait, you don't believe in God? Of course I believe in God. But He told you not to do this. Okay. What's the answer to that? Meaning, we have this conflict. We have our values. And then when we have to live up to reality, sometimes our reality doesn't live up to our values. And that's where Chazal say there's an element where whenever we do tshuva, part of tshuva is the recognition that Hashem is present. I'm living with Him here. I have to behave in accordance. Notice the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, Shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid. I constantly place Hashem before me. So I said a vort on this. Why does it say Shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid? Why doesn't it say Chashavti? I thought of Hashem in front of me always. What does it mean Shiviti? So I said, because our nature is that we ask a person, is God in the room right now? Oh yeah, God's in the room right now. Do I behave like God's in the room right now? I have to place Him in the room. Shiviti. I place Hashem in the room before me, because my nature is, it's not so easy to live a life and think every moment Hashem is here. Would I be doing everything I'm doing? Well, whenever we do something wrong, there's an element that atzat elyon na'atzu. That's what David HaMelech is talking about. There's an element where we only give ourselves that leeway because we're willing to say, leave me alone. You're not here. Okay, I'm going to ignore that you're here. And that's the balance. That's the more a person can build up his recognition that Hashem is present, so then the observance of mitzvot is a natural outflow of that. If He's here, then obviously I got to do what He says. And that's where David HaMelech says, the people who have transgressed, there's an element of blasphemy in every transgression.
an element. I'm
saying, you ask a person, do you deny God's existence? No, I don't deny. So what were you doing? I wasn't thinking. But you were thinking. I wasn't thinking about that. Or I didn't want to think about that at that moment. So that's the challenge. How much can I say, I'm going to think about that, and my behavior will be reflective of the idea that Hashem is here. What's this on her head? What's called in English, in Yiddish?
Yarmulke.
Yeah, what does yarmulke mean? Yare me eloka, fear of heaven. Yarmulke, yare me eloka, fear of heaven.
Yarmulke.
Okay.
Fear of king.
Fine. And so Hashem subdues their heart when they're in captivity, and they've stumbled and they feel like no one's there to help him. Our sages say there was a king named Menashe. Menashe was the wicked king of Judea who brought about the destruction of the temple in his transgressions. What did Menashe do? He took a Torah scroll, and wherever Hashem's name appeared, he would erase Hashem's name and put in the name of a different idol. And he worshipped every idol he could hear about, worshipped every idol under the sun. He murdered so many people, it says Jerusalem was knee-high in blood. So Menashe was a terrible king. And then it says in Divrei Yamim, in Chronicles, that Menashe was captured. And they took him in captivity at war, and they made this huge pot. And they put him in the pot. And they closed the lid. And then they put a fire underneath. And they started boiling him alive. And as he is being burnt alive, Menashe starts turning to every idol he had prayed to in his lifetime. And he prays to every idol, save me, save me, save me, and nothing works. Now his father was a big tzaddik, Chizkiyo. Remember Chizkiyo, the king of Judea, who could have been the Messiah had he praised Hashem correctly. So Chizkiyo, who had the great miracle where Sanherib, the Assyrian king, had surrounded Jerusalem after destroying the northern 10 tribes and destroying kingdom after kingdom, including northern Africa, he comes back with so many soldiers, there's no natural way to win the war, and Hashem makes a miracle, and in one night, a plague comes out and finishes off his army, and there's a miracle. Chizkiyo is saved. So Chizkiyo was reluctant to get married because he understood he would have a wicked son. And his cousin, the Navi Yeshaya, Isaiah, told him, if you don't get married, you don't have a chance in the world to come. You're gone in this world and the world to come. So he marries Yeshaya's daughter. And then he has a son. He has two children. One dies and the other one is Menashe. And Menashe grows up to be the wicked king Menashe. And then when he's in captivity, and he's there being boiled to death after worshiping every idol under the sun, he says, when I was a kid, my dad told me there's a God in heaven. Ribono shel olam, if you save me now, I'll know you're different. And if you don't save me now, then I know you're like all the rest. And that's his prayer to Shemayim. So it says his prayer went up, and all the angels blocked it. You know, you ever see football where they all make a defense, right? No. They lock arms and they say, we're not letting anyone through. So all the angels locked and said, the prayer's not coming in. Menashe, we don't want his prayer coming in. Says the Talmud, Hashem made a hole through his own throne and stuck his hand underneath and grabbed his prayer. Hashem said, a person wants to do tshuva, it might not fit the heavenly system of angels, where angels say, logically, there's no room for such tshuva after everything he's done. I'm God. You guys are angels. And I say that when a person wants to do tshuva, I'm going to let him do tshuva in spite of you. And I'm going to overrule the systems of heaven. And so Hashem makes room for Menashe to do tshuva, and Menashe is saved. And he comes back to Israel and he does tshuva. Now what's interesting is the Navi Yirmiyo, Jeremiah, in the book of Melachim, in Kings, he doesn't record that Menashe ever did tshuva. Throughout the book of Kings and Yirmiyo, all you hear is, because of the sins of Menashe, that's why the temple was destroyed. You have to reach Chronicles, that was written in the beginning of the Second Temple. Ezra wrote Divrei Yamim, and there Ezra reveals to us that actually Menashe did tshuva. There's a happy ending. In a minute, Chazal say when we get to Shemayim, so there's a Garden of Eden, right? And there are special rooms. There's the general Garden of Eden, then there are rooms. There are special floors for people who are unique. So there's a special floor for Chozrim B'Tshuva. If a person is a Chozer B'Tshuva, he right away takes the elevator and he goes up to a certain floor. And there's a yeshiva where they could all the souls learn together. Who's the head of the yeshiva for Chozrim B'Tshuva? Menashe. Menashe is the Rosh Yeshiva for so Menashe made it very big. So coming back to here, so when a person is in a situation where he doesn't feel like there's hope, vayachna be'amalibam, right? When a person feels like he doesn't see how he's going to get out, so then sometimes that situation of suffering can cause his heart to be subdued. Where a person says, okay, Rabbon Shalom, I want to come back. Kashelu ve'enozer, when a person feels like he's stumbling and there's no one there to help him. Now this is a tremendous gift, because if it were one of us, then the way we would say is, oh, you only come to me when you need me. You never spoke to me until now. Now you have a problem, so now I exist, right? Did you ever have friends like that? They don't call you for years, and suddenly you see their number on the caller ID, and you say, what does he need now? After 5 years, he's calling me. Must be he suddenly needs something. And lo and behold, he calls you up, and he's all friendly. How are you? Long time no speak. It's so good to hear from you. How's your family? Is everything doing well? And you understand it's all a prelude, and you're going to be polite, because you feel like saying, could you cut to the chase? What do you want? But you're not. You're going to be polite. And then he suddenly says, you know, I've run into some trouble, and I have these debts, and they're disconnecting my electric, and I got a real problem. Can you spare maybe a few $1,000? Can I borrow from you? So what would we say? Now we're friends. You didn't call me for years. It's been a decade, and I didn't exist. You didn't return my emails. I emailed you and wished you a happy birthday. You never thought to email back. I didn't even know if I had the right email. You never returned my calls. I made a class reunion, you didn't show up. I invited you and you didn't come. So we have a lot of things which we might not say, but we're going to think, and therefore, would we let the person back? The Rabbon Shalom says when a person turns to him after he's had trouble, and he hasn't shown up to shul for Rosh Hashanah for many years, right? There's a class reunion, everyone shows up, he doesn't show up. The rabbi's been calling him and say, why don't you come for services every so often? And he doesn't return the calls. So God, a person has left God out of his life for a long time. And suddenly he's got problems. That's a recurring theme in Tanakh, that the Rabbon Shalom says, I've been waiting for you so long, come back. The Rabbon Shalom doesn't say what we would say, you didn't think of me until now, till you needed me. The Rabbon Shalom, in his infinite kindness, says, I'm so happy you came. I've been waiting all this time. And perhaps, we have to learn from the Rabbon Shalom what it means to be a good friend. What it means that perhaps people will sometimes say to their own children or grandchildren, you haven't called me until now. You don't care. You only need me. You want to use me. Well, if it's only you need me, you want to use me, so that's a different thing. But if it's I want a connection with you, and I also need your help. So that's a phenomenal concept that Hashem keeps saying, I'm waiting for you. But here's a key point, which we saw in the Drashot Aran. There's a person that reaches a troubled state, and he says, I'm going to pray to God till my problem is resolved. It's like the guy who can't find a parking spot, you know? Says, Rabbon Shalom, give me a parking spot, I want to daven. And then a car pulls out in front of him. He says, never mind God, I got a spot. Yeah. Right? But that's all of us. That's all of us. And so the Ran explains the idea that we can do tshuva at a time of need is if we'll be sincere. Is if we'll say, Rabbon Shalom, I do want a relationship now. I know it took all of this in order to get me there, but now I'm there. So then if we want a relationship, the Rabbon Shalom doesn't hold it against us that it took us that long to come back. That it took us all these problems in order to come back to him. And this is sometimes the challenge. Sometimes everything's been going wrong in a person's life, and he feels like, I'm going to turn to God now. No. I know that I'm only turning to him because I got problems. On the contrary, the Rabbon Shalom says, why do you think you have problems? You know, that's the old joke. The guy's lying on his deathbed, and his partner is next to him. So Frank is on the deathbed and Jack is sitting next to him, and Frank goes to Jack. He says to him, "Jack, I can't believe how good you are to me. I'm dying here. And you've been with me all this time. Frank, don't worry. You can rest in peace. But Jack, you don't understand. When we started the partnership, you remember 2 months into the partnership, $5,000 disappeared from the cash register? Yes, Frank. Well, Jack, you don't understand. I took those $5,000. It's okay, Frank. You can rest in peace. But Jack, you don't understand. You don't understand. You remember we invested in a brand new forklift. That was $50,000. And then one day it disappeared from the parking lot. Well, I went and I sold that forklift and I pocketed the money. Frank, it's okay. You can rest in peace. But Jack, you don't understand. You really don't understand. You remember when I told you that someone broke into our bank account and the money, I told you the account was hacked and the money disappeared. So Jack says, Frank, you don't have to worry about it. You can rest in peace. So Frank looks at Jack and he says, Jack, how could you say that? So Jack says, Frank, who do you think put the poison in your coffee? We have problems, and sometimes we're hesitant to turn Lotada. We're hesitant to turn to the Rabbon Shom, and the Rabbon Shom saying, who put the problem in your life anyways? I gave you this problem so you'd come back to me. The Medrash says, what's it similar to? There was a king who was traveling through the forest and he heard a maiden in distress. The damsel is yelling, save me, save me. So the king comes riding with his knights and he sees the damsel and there are a bunch of bandits there and they want to steal from her. And the king comes in with his knights and they chase them away and they escort the lady back to her house. And then afterwards, the king sends a letter to her. Hi, I'd like to meet you. I'd like to get to know you better. And she doesn't address his letter. She doesn't answer. And he tries a second time and a third time and nothing doing. So he says, oh, she won't even talk to me now. So he hires a group of people and he says, I'm going to be standing in the forest. And you guys, when you see her come out of her house, you go and attack her. And then she'll say, save me. And then I'm going to charge in and save her. And then we'll see if she'll talk to me. Right? The Medrash says, that's us and the Rabbon Shalom. The Rabbon Shalom says, I want to talk to you. I want a relationship with you. And so we're weird. Too busy. We're too busy. And then we suddenly have problems in our lives. If we wake up when there are small problems, the Rabbon Shalom says, good. And if we wait longer, the challenge is the man sometimes thinks, now I'm going to turn to the Rabbon Shalom. And the Rabbon Shalom is saying the exact opposite. Do I have to make it worse for you? I gave you these problems because it's a wake-up call. Come back. So,
and it's just so rigged. It just feels like it's forced emotion. It's ungenuine. That's ungenuine.
Think about it. We move on to Pasuk Yud Gimel. So when things were tough for them, they call out to Hashem, and so Hashem saves them from their difficult state. I find in my own personal prayer that there's this invisible wall I have to cross over. Whenever I have problems or challenges in my life, I have to remind myself that the Rabbon Shalom is not only the source of the problem, he's also the source of the solution. Very often when things go wrong or things are challenging, so my first thought is, it's hard. And the focus goes inward. What am I going to do? How am I going to resolve it? How am I going to contend? What should I do next? The mind goes into practical mode, survival mode. What do I do now? And I have to force myself to say, talk to the Rabbon Shalom. He created this. He knows the solution better than I know the solution. Let me talk to him. Tefillah. Well, a person has to connect to tefillah. And sometimes a person has to force himself into it, at least to get started. And from there, it flows. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Yes. Lotada. No, I can't. Toch kidei learning. Lotada. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Yotzi'im. Mechoshech v'tzal ma'avet. God takes these people out of darkness and the shadow of death. Umosarotehem. Yinatek. And Hashem undoes, breaks loose their shackles, and now they are free. Yodula Donai Chasdaho, they give thanks to Hashem for his kindness, Venifleotav Livnei Adam, and his wondrous things to man. And here we have a point, there's the old joke about the guy who comes to heaven, and they take him to see all the different rooms, and he sees, he asks, what's this room? And they say, this is the room where people ask for help. And he sees an old man busy there, getting in letters, throwing back letters, right? He goes into the next room, he asks him, what's this room? And he says, this is the room where people ask for a livelihood. And he sees constantly prayers are coming up, and he's sending back down, right? And then he goes room by room, every room the different needs. And then he comes into one room, and there's a room at the end of the hallway. There's an old man sitting there reading a book. And there's nothing coming up and nothing going down. He says, what's this room? And he says, this is the room where people say thank you. So we all know, right? We know how to ask when we need something. One of the messages of this chapter is to say thank you when we got it. Prayer is not just about asking when we need it. It's also about saying thank you when we got it. Pasuk Tetzayin, Ki Shibal, Deltot Nechoshech, for Hashem broke down the doors of copper, Uvichei Vazel, Gideya, and the bolts of metal. Hashem uprooted, Evilim, Miderech Pisham, Umeavonoteyem, Gitanu. Evilim, again, the Pasuk is describing the people who have transgressed. They have they've gone away against the way of Hashem, and that's why they find themselves ill. The third type of person who gives thanks to Hashem is a person with illness, who's going to be cured from illness. So the first one was one who's in the desert and lost. The second one was one who is in bondage, one who is a captive and gets free. The third one is one who is deathly ill. Illness will sometimes cause a person that they don't want to eat anything. Anything they're offered to eat disgusts them. They reach the gates of death. They call out to Hashem in their state of affliction. And Hashem saves them from their suffering, their affliction. Hashem sends His command, and they are cured. And Hashem saves them from the grave. These people have a responsibility to thank Hashem for His kindness. And Hashem's wondrous things that He does on behalf of men. They bring offerings of thanks. And our sages say that this is also the concept of a korban todah. Who brings an offering of thanks? Four people have to bring a thanking offering, a thanksgiving offering. A thanksgiving offering, a korban todah, is these four people. We've learned three thus far, right? Midbar, he who goes through the desert. Asirei, those who are in bondage. And Choli, those who are ill. And now we're up to the fourth. Yoridei hayam ba'oniyot, those who go down into the sea with ships. The fourth person is he who goes down into the sea. Osei melacha b'mayim rabim, they who do tasks in the great waters. Hemara'u ma'asei Adonai, they see the actions of God. V'nifleotav b'mtzula, the wondrous things Hashem does in the depths. Vayomer, Hashem decrees, Vayamed Ruach Sehara, and Hashem makes turbulent winds stop, Vatromim Galav, and Hashem could make the ship go up over the waves. Hashem could make the waves go up. Hashem could make the wind that makes the wind that makes great waves come. Hashem could make that wind stop. Ya'alu shamayim yeredu tehomot. People on a ship, when there's turbulence, they're thrown up, they're thrown down. And when you're thrown up, you feel like you're being thrown all the way to heaven. And when you're thrown down, you feel like you're hitting the bottom of the sea. Nafsham bira'ati tmogag, and their soul is suffering, is wallowing in the fear of death. Ya'alush, Pasuk Chavzayin, Yachogu v'yanu kashikor, they are tossed and turned on the ship as though they are drunk. You ever see a person going on a ship in turbulence? He's walking like a drunk. He can't walk straight. V'chol chochmatam titbala. And even though they're considered very wise people who know how to run a ship, when there's tremendous turbulence, suddenly all their wisdom is gone. V'yitzaku el Adonai batzal lahem. In that state of affliction, they call out to Hashem. U'mi metzukotehem yotzi'im. And Hashem takes them out of their state of affliction. Yakim se'ara lidmamah. Hashem causes the great storm to turn silent. V'yecheshu galehem. And suddenly the waves also go silent. V'yismechu chi yishtoku. So the sailors rejoice as the waves go silent. V'yanchehim el mechoz cheftzam. And Hashem guides them to the place they were headed to. Yodu l'Adonai chasdo. These sailors, these people on the ship, they should give thanks to Hashem for His kindness. V'nifleotav livnei adam. That they will tell over Hashem's wondrous things to other men. They will praise Hashem in the masses and where there are the elders. From here we learn the halacha, that when you say the blessing of a gomel, there must be kehalam, there must be 10 Jews present, and ideally there should be moshav zekenim, two older people or two learned people among the 10 of moshav zekenim. That halacha we learn from here. Why do we wait for shul? Technically, you don't have to wait for shul. Technically, if you make a siyum, if you have 10 people present, ideally two rabbis among the 10, because it says moshav zkenim, and in the presence of elders, then you could say the blessing of Hagomel. That's derived from this pasuk. Yes.
Would that also apply for women?
Yes. Usually women do it behind the mechitza, but if they have to say agomel, some have the custom that women don't bless agomel. Others have the custom that the husband blesses agomel on their behalf. Toda rabah. Yasem neharot lemidbar. Hashem makes the streams become arid like the desert. Aside from these great miracles, Hashem is still going to do great things, such as turning the rivers into deserts. Sources of water will become sources of thirst. Fruitful land will become salty land. Our sages say this is a reference to what's yet to come. The great war of Gog and Magog. Toda rabah. Thank you very much. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nihyeh bedvaro. So what's going to happen in the war of Gog and Magog? So Chazal say in the war of Gog and Magog have the numerical value of 70. All 70 nations are still coming to the gates of Jerusalem. There is still to be a campaign of all the nations uniting to destroy Israel in Jerusalem. Chazal say they will come and they will think they are victorious. And then there are two versions to the story. It's not clear if there are two stages. One version to the story is they will lead us and our leader out into the desert, just like we were out in the desert with Moshe Rabbeinu. And for 40 days, the leader will disappear from us, and we will travel leaderless in the desert until he will reappear and take us back to victory into Israel and Jerusalem. Another version is that they will surround Jerusalem again, just as happened in the days of Chizkiyoh, and the people will unite in Jerusalem. And when they surround Jerusalem, then Hashem will appear, as is described in the prophecy that's read on Sukkot, that Har HaZeitim will crack in half, and Hashem will appear and fight the war against the nations, and there will be an extraordinary victory for Israel. Whether this is a description of two possible outcomes or two stages to the war, I don't know. But there's a war that's yet to come, which is going to be a world war, but it's going to be the world against Israel.
I know what's grave is going down when the mountain cracks open. Yehoash.
Okay. So.
Has to.
They can be the UN. Now, then it looked impossible the entire world coming here to fight you. Now we have bodies like the UN with.
Oh.
That's in order for the redemption to take place, right?
Well, we don't know exactly how it's supposed to play itself out, but this is a description in the prophets. Whether we'll say that Jerusalem is not the critical factor. The critical factor is that the world powers were determined to destroy Israel, and that came true in World War II. where the world powers were determined to destroy us. I mean, there were ships that had set sail to the United States and Roosevelt sent them back to be killed in Germany. I'm saying there's what the interpretation is.
Yeah.
So many commentaries say that Hashem gave prophecies in ways that there are multiple interpretations, and it depends on us which will come true. Meaning there were opportunities in world history for these interpretations to come true. In the days of Chizkiyah, in different times in history, it could have come true. Whether we live up to our end and it does come true is a question. So either way, some of the commentaries learn that the continuation, the ending of this chapter is, this is the thanks that we're familiar with. There's still going to be a greater thanks, as Hashem will bring a greater redemption to the world at large. Yes?
Could you call the media at all? Because the whole media is against Israel.
So Chazal say there are two types of wars and there are two types of hatreds. There is Sone and Oyev. There is the present danger, the one who threatens us directly, and that's one type of enemy. And then there's the enemy who hates us from afar, where they're not doing anything actively against us, but they hate us. They're still an enemy. There are two types of enemies. So we have to look at the prophecies and see which one is being described.
The media is much more powerful. Like, everybody can see it, get it.
It's causality. They're not killing, they're causing killings. They're causing anti-Semitism. They're not directly killing. They're not murdering with their hands.
When I saw the media after the second intifada, I was in Israel and went home to Denver, and then I said, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody gave excuse to do something violent against Jews.
Agreed. Agreed, but
and
that's
a few months, you know, anti-Semitism from the Muslims grew in Denmark. 1 year ago, God got killed in Denmark.
Yeah.
Can you see media that we Israel is made like
I hear Pasuk Lamedalid Eretz Pri Lim Lecha Meraat Yosheveva. The fruitful land turned salty because of the evil of those who live there. Yasem Midbar Lagamayim. And Hashem does the exact opposite. Hashem takes the desert and makes it filled like a pond of water. The Eretz Tziyah Lemotzai Mayim. The most arid land is suddenly a source of water. And this we're almost up to. Now, scientifically, they've developed a way to cause clouds in the desert. Scientifically, they have now developed. It's already past the developmental stage. They know today how to cause clouds to form. And we're at a point where it's on the horizon now that they're going to be able to make deserts fruitful because we now know how to make clouds. Vayoshev sham re'evim, vaychoninu il moshav. And so Hashem settled hungry people there. And suddenly they were able to establish a civilized city. Vayizra'u sadot, vayite'u cheramim, vayasu peri tivua. They planted fields, they planted vineyards, and they developed fruit. Now you could learn this about the land of Israel. When we came here, it was swamp and desert. And now look at what we have. Vayivarechem vayirbu me'od. Hashem blessed them, and they multiplied greatly. Uvim ta'am lo yamit, and their cattle also wasn't diminished. Vayimatu vayashochu me'otzer ra'ah ve'yagon. And Hashem can also do the exact opposite, where people who transgress find themselves diminished and put down to the earth. And this, the Pasuk says, is a product of their transgressions. Shofech buz al nedivim. Hashem will sometimes take the great philanthropist and pour over him shame. Interesting. Vayatehim betohu lo darech. And Hashem makes people who, until that point, seemed like they were the leaders of the world, and they could say whatever they want and get away with it. And suddenly they don't seem to know where they're headed, what they're supposed to do. Suddenly they're in disarray. They feel like they have no path to go on. Vaisagev evyon meyoni. And Hashem does the exact opposite. He takes a person who's totally impoverished, and Hashem strengthens him in spite of his poor state. Vayasem katzon mishpachot. And Hashem makes it that he has a large number of families, as though he has herds of sheep. Yeru yesharim veyismachu. Honest people see how Hashem brings blessing, how Hashem guides the world, and they're happy with it. V'chol avla kafetz apiha. And even people who are sinful, when they see that righteous people work their way out of their poverty, they also have to be silent. Michacham veyishmor eile. The conclusion of the chapter is, David HaMelech tells us, who is so smart that they can retain these ideas? Ve'itboninu chasdei Adonai. And then look at the kindness that Hashem does. So a person can live through these times and not notice these things. Shlomo HaMelech, David HaMelech says, who's smart enough to retain these concepts so that when they encounter them, they'll relive the verses I just said. So that's what we pointed out throughout the chapter. Part of what's being said here is, do you notice it? Or are you the guy who's looking for parking and saying, thanks God, I managed. Do we see Hashem helping us in our lives? Do we see it to say thank you? And that's where David concludes the chapter. Who's smart enough to notice this? People can have much blessing in their lives and not see any of it. It takes a certain wisdom to notice it when a person has these blessings in their life.